Greetings, friends. Bricky here with another Adventures in Design. I want to ask you right now, how much is enough? Have you ever actually stopped and think about what your personal threshold is for how much is enough? When will you have enough money? When will you have enough success? When will you have, quote unquote, had enough fun at whatever your occupation is? I mean, have you ever even thought about what your endpoint is? Have you ever even planned where your career ends? I mean, have you literally thought about what is the goal that I want to get to, whether it's financially or title or accomplishment? Where is the line in the sand that once I get there, I'm done. I've done it. I don't think most of us have even thought of that as being a possibility because we just work like dogs 20 hours a day until we can't do that anymore. So then we bring it down to 16 or 18 hours a day and say, whoa, I'm really cutting back. And then we get older, we get more exhausted, we somehow get down to like 8 to 12 hours a day, and we just keep going and we keep grinding. But seriously, have you thought to yourself, have you talked to your partner, whether it's your business partners or your life partners, how much is enough? Where does this merry-go-round come to a stop? When do you finally get off the ride that is your career? I'm being serious, like really push back on yourself, because I know that I've never really even thought about that. I've never really planned for where all of this ends. I've always just did a series of three-year plans that I break down into year plans, that I break down into quarterly plans, and I just keep building and building and building. But what the fuck am I building and where is it going? So I'm saying to myself as well as I'm saying to you, how much is enough and where is all this going? But don't forget, if you become too successful, must be nice will be what everybody will say to you over and over again. And to that I say, yeah, it must be nice. It must be nice to work so hard to set a goal and then to reach that goal and then destroy it. Yeah, it must be nice to set a list of accomplishments, make it to those accomplishments, and then go beyond that. It must be nice to reach the end of your career. And not because you lost it all, right? Like we've talked to a lot of people on this show that got to the end of their career because they were forced there, right? They lost everything they had and it's a story of heartbreak. Or, you know, the thing that we don't like to talk about, you get to the end of your career because you simply lost your touch, your skill set, your artistic vision, whatever you used to add to the world, you just got outdated. Because your industry either packed up and called it a day. For example, I used to work in music retail. That doesn't really exist anymore. But the first time I downloaded a track from the iTunes store, I said, whoa, I got to get a different job. Because these record stores that I work for, where I'm making 95% of my income, they're going to go away. But some people didn't escape. Some people didn't have an escape pod like me, and they got stuck. Their industry left them behind. So there's many people that come to the end of their career, but only few that get there because it was on their call. Not a forced end, but a declared end, an end to the means that you met your goal. And look, for every failure that I've captured over 1,300 episodes of this podcast now, and oh, we have told many forced retirements. We've talked about a lot of people that had a good thing going that famously fell apart. Today's story, this one's going out on a high note. And I'm going to ask you, don't shame success. Why do we embrace underdogs and people that are in a moment of losing so highly and then roll our eyes at someone that goes out on a high note? What is so fucked up and broken in so many of us that that's the way our minds are programmed? I mean, fuck that. Cheer on success and then learn from it and root for your own. That's my mindset. I love listening to people talk that are wildly more successful for me. And even though they don't do what I do, because most people don't podcast professionally, I like to take the abstract of what they're saying and try to apply it to my reality. And that's why I think this story today is way more relatable, probably, than what you think. Because even though you might not be ready to retire from your career, as in you have the financial means to be like, fuck it, I'm done working, you might be ready to switch gears. Maybe you're worried, though, about, well, if I'm no longer perceived as that guy, Who will I be to the rest of the world? Because for many of us, our careers have become our identities. I'll say it a second time because you know it's fucking true. Our careers have become our identities. And if we switch our careers, if we let go of our careers, then who am I? If I can't say that I'm the guy from here or the gal that works there, who am I if I don't have my title anymore? But maybe today's conversation will help you switch those gears, help you walk away and start writing that next chapter in your career that you need to write or that you feel compelled to write, but you're maybe staying at the party 2 years too long, and I've stayed there before. But let me tell you this, from somebody that makes big career decisions about every 5 years, it takes courage to change. Whether it's, you know, a huge, massive step of leaving one industry and starting another, and I've done that several times, or maybe it's a baby step, just switching your focus of your business. You know, I'm just making a lot of content about design and content, and I love going to Disneyland, so maybe I'll make some more of that. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a huge step or a baby step. It just change takes courage because it's scary to change. But the safe thing to do, and this is what many of us tend to do, is staying the same. That is the safest route you can take. Well, I know that it works. It's worked for the last 1 to 10 years. So I'm just going to stay here. Even though I don't love it like I used to, I don't feel the challenge that I used to. It's easy, and that's where I want to be. But I've never been afraid of change of any size, and maybe to my own detriment. But I've always celebrated those who did the same. Whether it was a good change, a bad change, a forced change, or a change that they want on their own, I've always celebrated the story of people that make that risk happen because I always feel like that's where we find the real drama of life and where we find inspiration to make our own changes. Once again, you know, change doesn't have to be going into work today and telling your boss, you know what, fuck you, I'm out of here. Change can literally be like, can I refocus my energies? Is there a way to change my workflow? Is there a way to change what my subject matter is? But inevitably, change is what makes us more well-rounded. It nurtures the soul, and it gives us that energy to fully commit to something new in front of us because we're not lying in that rut anymore. So today we celebrate my good friend, Nick Biggie Grimaldi, who has embraced change. He didn't know it when he woke up last Friday, but midway through the day, he had a Jerry Maguire moment and said, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to be in the music industry anymore after 2 decades of being in the music industry, working with bands at various different levels as a band manager. And today I'm happy to share with you his success story. And I'm not only happy to share it with you because it's a great story, I'm happy to share it with you because I got to witness it firsthand. And one of the things that I love in this world is getting a contact buzz from your buds. I may never be able to do what Biggie's done financially, and I might not get there, but having a friend that did it and seeing it happen right in front of my eyes, it allows me to know this is possible. This is real. This is true. These are things that happen. And if it can't happen to you, isn't it great for it to happen to a close friend so you at least get the contact buzz of what it all looks like when it all goes right? So before we get into this conversation, real quickly, I just want to say this. Good luck, Biggie. I know after you take a long break that is well-deserved, and I believe you should take a break and enjoy those girls for all they're worth and be the dad that you want to be and the dad that you didn't have. I can't wait to see what chapter that you write next, because we both know, everybody that knows you knows, you're not done writing chapters in your life. No fucking way are you just going to retire and sit at home and make a model in a bottle. And because Biggie is my bud and because he did want to use the podcast to sort of, you know, have something to share with his friends so they could understand who he is, what he was thinking at this particular time, today's episode is entirely presented to you by the members of the Circle of Trust over at AID.network. Thank you so much, COT members, for supporting the podcast, for making it possible for me to make 200 episodes a year, just like today's. And today's episode is free for all because I want to make sure that all of Biggie's buds, all of Biggie's friends can hear the complete conversation, parts 1 and 2, and understand where he's coming from and hopefully find a little bit of influence or inspiration from what he was able to accomplish. It's my bud, Biggie, Nick Grimaldi's exit interview. Adventures in Design 1359. we were like 15 and we were skateboarding nonstop every day, and you said to yourself, I'm never going to stop skateboarding.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. I have to think about that all the time. And I would be like, so one day I'm just going to not skateboard? Like, there's no way. There's no way. Maybe I'll slow down. And I remember when it happened. I don't remember when I just stopped. Like, one day I just stopped skateboarding. And now every, you know, once a year I pick up a board and try to kickflip to make sure I'm still young.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's like, I just stopped. I don't remember.
Well, I always just think about this. I remember being 15 and thinking, I want to skateboard forever. And then 16 comes and a car creates the need for a job and money for gas. And then girls come around. And then I got really, really into punk shows. But Biggie, once I got to punk shows, I said, this is it. This is never going to change. 1989, I go see Agnostic Front. I say, this is the rest of my life. But then all of a sudden, life happened, right? And you don't know all the new bands, everybody who's playing, and you're like, oh, when I go to the shows now, I'm like one of the old guys.
Yeah.
But the young kids, like, they know my name, they have a nickname for me. That's like grumpy tattooed guy or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And then all of a sudden, you're like, I'm running the hardcore scene and no longer a kid in the crowd. And all of these steps just happen like so fast that we don't even realize they're happening. And so I wanted to start there with that today, because I'm sure as you're letting go of your career in music, which has been an amazing ride, there's probably a part of you that feels like you've sold yourself out, or you've like let yourself down somehow. And I just wanted to take you back and remember, you were a diehard skateboarder once. It was never skate or die, bro. You were never going to stop.
That's right.
You were a kid in the crowd going to every punk show. You were going to be that guy forever.
Yeah.
And then you became the guy on the side of the stage. Like, this is just life, man.
Yep. And I was never going to stop managing bands. You know, that was my, I just didn't see that end coming.
No.
And here we are, you know, officially retiring from it.
After how many years?
I mean, if you look at the whole music journey, my first tour was in 1998.
Wow.
You know,
wow, that's a long haul.
23 years in some capacity, you know, managing bands since I think the end of 2008, Conroy brought me on, mm-hmm. you know, and then when he left a few years later, it's been, you know, me at the helm of it with a couple partners, obviously, but 10 years of that roughly. So just more music career than anything else in my life. My longest relationship.
Oh, you know? 100%.
And as I've been reflecting on it like that, it's just, it's crazy to think about, man. Like, there's so many avenues and ways I could think about how actually crazy not only my career but journey and how it happened, and then now like kind of the ending of it, just ending instead of just a fizzle out more so. And it's not like I struggle. I wrote you struggling, being like, dude, this is lame. Like, doing a podcast about me. Like,
it's not. It's not lame at all.
And I'm not trying to be some grandiose, like, my crazy run is at an end. And that's not it. It's more, it's almost for me, the accountability of like, it's fucking done.
Right.
Like, you're telling all your friends,
right,
all your family, all your colleagues, all your bands, anyone who listens to this podcast or tuning in now, like, I'm out of the music industry.
But don't worry about it. Kiss said they were out and they came back around.
So that's true.
There's always a way back in.
Damn, I might do a reunion.
I kept thinking, I was driving over here today and I kept thinking, like, you know what's going to happen now is everywhere you go, you're going to see like a sick band that just needs a helping hand to get them where they're at. Like, everywhere you go, you're just going to see a band. You're like, that band looks like money waiting to be made.
And I'll just run the other way.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you know, I have changed the tone in my life, like the chapters of my life, probably more than most people I know. Like, you doing something singular for 23 years is kind of crazy to me, because, you know, I was guy in band, guy working for the music industry, well-known like artist, designer guy, well-known podcaster. Like, I've just kind of, I always look at it as like jumping freight cars, right? Like, you go onto the next train until you just kind of feel like, I don't know, creatively you need something else. So to me, this makes sense. To a lot of people though, the part that's going to be hard for them to understand and why this is such an exciting conversation to have is that you had a very high level of success. And I've hit a decent level of success several times in my life. And I think that's the thing that people have a hard time understanding. Like, you know, Bricky, like, you were an award-winning designer. How did you let that go?
Yeah.
Well, I fell in love with something that I needed more, you know, like the heart wants what the heart wants. Mm-hmm. So for you, is it kind of unbelievable that you're at a moment where you're like, there's something that just feels more important to me than doing this thing that was my fucking identity for two decades plus?
Yeah, it's very crazy, because it was more than my identity. It was everything. Like, I put it before everything.
Yeah.
I put work before everything. And I talk about this with my friends all the time. It's like, there's a chunk of the beginning of June, my first daughter's life, that I do not remember.
Right.
Like, that was when we were both in the thick of it. Her company was exploding. I had the most bands and employees at that time. And I just remember having my second kid and being like, this is the last kid I'm having. This is the only time I'm ever going to be able to experience this again. I need to chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, and it's crazy. The difference in things I remember with Lily, the second daughter, versus my first, and it's kind of gross, you know? And I put sleep to the side, any type of event to the side, and there was never a show that happened that I wasn't at, or an email I didn't take right then, or reply to you right then, or a call I didn't take right then, or it just was paramount, you know? And it was put before everything to a fault, and it wasn't bad. It just wasn't like I had like a family that didn't get it and dad's not around. It wasn't like that. Heather is very similar in her style of business where she just go. You know, I stay up late, you know, so like a lot of my shit happened late at night. So it wasn't like I'm not at the dinner table and my kids are wondering where I am. It's not that at all. But it was more for me mentally to understand that like there are things more important than what these band members need at all times. And it's literally at all times, you know, and I need to pay attention to that and answer that.
As one of your friends, somebody who's gone out to eat with you, road tripped with you, hung out at sporting events, like you're always just half there.
Oh, yeah.
You're always just half there. And we all just kind of know it. And we like would look over at you and laugh because you would just be like sucked into something. Wow, something gnarly is happening in front of us. And we look over at Big and he's just like head down on the phone.
Dead. I know.
But that's just what we knew about you. But one of the things that I thought would be awesome for you in this journey, for so many people that are listening right now that can't even imagine having the luxury that you had to say, I'm done, or I want to quit, or do this or the other, is like, I feel like we've been led this lie. Entrepreneurs, sort of the dream catchers, right? Like the people that just like pursue passion and hope to find profitability, right? Like you want to get the profitability. I'm not a hippie and but just do what you love, man. Yeah. But you know, it's passion first. And then if you can attach that to profitability, now you're winning. But there's this lie that I feel like a lot of us have been told where it's love what you do, never work a day in your life.
And it's like,
and I thought you would be a great person to break that down because you loved what you did. But I don't know if you ever had a day off in your life.
Yeah, no days off. I mean, I literally got married at a particular time of the year to make sure that it wouldn't affect touring and all that. I got married January 4th because it's that lull period. On a Sunday.
Shittiest day you could get married.
Absolutely. And you know what's fucked? I got married Sunday night.
Yeah.
It was a Sunday night. And 7 hours after getting to our hotel room, which because we didn't take a honeymoon, we just stayed 10 miles down from our house, I got a call from Conroy.
Yeah.
The next day. Just like, oh shit, you got married yesterday, right? Like, he sent me a gift, whatever. Like, it was, but he was just in the mode. I'm just like, all right, you know, like 7 hours later, we're working. And yeah, like I loved it. It was great. It is great. It's a sick job, but it's tiring. It's taxing. It's never ending. And I don't think people can truly understand what that does to your emotional and physical state when anytime your phone buzzes or rings, it could be something terrible.
Yeah.
And it fucks you up. Anytime I would get up in the middle of the night, I would check my phone and sometimes not go back to sleep or get some bad news or get some frustrating news or get fucking good news. And it was just never ending. I would get up in the middle of dinners to go to the bathroom and check my phone without being rude or whatever. Brian actually mentioned this the other day. He's like, remember when you would not leave anywhere without your laptop?
Oh, I remember that.
You would walk in. I would take it to the fucking casino. I would take my laptop to play poker. I would take my laptop everywhere because if we went inside and ate a 45-minute meal, I had a 45-minute catch-up to do.
Yeah.
And I would try to do it en route to whatever we were doing. You know, like that was my life. And I loved it. But it got tiring. It got fucking real tiring and really stressful. And it just starts to show at some point. You know, at some point it starts to show. Like you stop caring about everything, and it's just a matter of time that's going to happen. And I've been very like perceptive of watching everyone around me. You know, people have done this long before me. People have done it long, will do it long after me. People have done it on much higher levels than me, you know? And so I've watched all these people that I either look up to for what they've accomplished or how they handled it or whatever. And if it's one thing I've noticed, it's like you either have your run, mm-hmm. where you're the guy,
mm-hmm.
or you'd never get it, or you just fucking fizzle out and die, you know, like, you, or stay a slave more so than that. Like, you right. just are gone. You're in it forever. And it was never my intention to be in it forever. Like, I know dudes that are 50 and 60 and managing bands and, you know, God bless, like, they're fucking murderers. And I learned a lot from them, but it's like, that was never my thing. I was never going to be working that long.
But you also know guys that are in their 50s that they're like, oh, dying. That guy's
they're struggling as fuck,
like, their roster's outdated, they're outdated, totally. They're like the lowest guy at some place that's not top tier, like, we all know those guys.
Absolutely. And I've seen, you know, when I was coming, oh, this guy is fucking all these bands, it's so sick, oh my god. And then, like, slowly but surely, they would lose this band,
yeah,
or they would have a falling out with this guy, or lose a crucial person at their company. And, you know, I'm not saying, oh, I'm leaving at the top, I'm not, you know, like, I've had my bands leave and people under me, you know, find other places and all that jazz. And it's some didn't bother me and some, like, really hurt me. Sure. You know, it just depends. But my goals were always, I've always been, you know, it's a joke, of course, with everyone, but it's like, I've been a financially driven person since I was very young. Mm-hmm. It's been, the goal was to make money and then live a life where I'm not worried about money, because mm-hmm. I watched my family worry about money their whole life and I fucking hated it.
Dude,
you know,
my aunts were broke as fuck. My momo, which is Southern for grandma, broke as fuck, never drove a new car, never owned her own home. And just seeing adults like, no, I can't do that, I don't have money.
Yeah.
It like, I was like, I'll never be that person.
Right. It wasn't, I always try to be careful and not paint some picture. Like, I lived in Orange County, California. I was fine. You sure. know, like, life was good. Sure. But my single mom worried about money at all times.
That worry, though, gets passed over to the
fuck
kids.
Yeah,
like, when my dad got laid off one summer and nobody took a minute to explain to me what unemployment was, and I went to bed every night thinking,
we're done.
Tomorrow we're homeless because this fucker won't go get a job.
Yeah.
Not knowing my dad was like, summer off. Summer off. I got unemployment. I ain't driving a truck in the hot summer, yeah. you know? But nobody explained that to me. And that paranoia in my mind, it's been with me my entire adult life. And whenever I reach a level of success, I get spun out. I'm like, but what happens when you lose this?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even enjoy the moment because I'm worried about when that falls apart, even when it's just materializing inside my hand. So that chase, that does get passed down to us parentally.
Yeah. And it's, for better or for worse, like, that was my plan. It's like, I want to be rich. And, like, I don't have any guilt saying it. And, like, I don't feel weird saying it. And I don't, whatever.
Why is that, though? Because, you know, I'll use me as an example here. When I was worried about coming up with enough money, because the podcast was having a rough year, when I was worried about coming up with enough money to get surgery on my eye, I didn't feel embarrassed at all talking about, I don't know if I can afford to get surgery that I need on my eye. I remember when we were debating, should I get the baller lens?
Eye.
The good eye or the shitty eye? For me, Biggie, that's like a compelling storyline that I don't matter talking about. But when I bought a Tesla, I was like,
you're all scared to talk about it.
Like, why are we like that? You know? And what I've always enjoyed about you being on the show is that you're a successful guy. You and your wife have fucking slayed it, built from the ground up, but you share it with us. You've shared it with everybody. So these people that somehow think that money is going to be the direct result of happiness, you break down, Biggie's just as fucking nuts as the rest of us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what's floating around the bank account. He's a fucking psycho.
Yeah. My terrible friend Kirk loves to say that Biggie's the only person I know that money didn't change, and it's too bad. Fucking asshole.
Hey, he's a genius because it's totally true.
You nail it. I don't feel bad because I know I worked for it. You know, yeah. If I like fell into money, or if it was like a dirty, dark secret that my parents gave me money, it'd be one thing. But it's like, I got receipts,
but
motherfucker. Like, I've been working my whole life, and I visualized and planned to move to Newport Beach, and planned to drive the cars, and planned to take the vacations, and planned to buy my mom dope shit, and planned to take care of everybody. And now that it's happening, I mean, it's fucking weird that like it's. We live in a world of social media, but I'm just an open book. I'm doing a retirement on a podcast because that's just where I am. I like communicating. I like telling the story. I don't want to talk to fucking 700 people on the phone and tell them why I'm feeling about why I retired and all that. It's like, here it is. When something cool happens in my life, I'm not going to fucking mass text everyone. Just fucking throw it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And like, if it looks like a flex or it looks like I'm oversharing, it's like, I don't care. It literally makes me happy. Like, it makes me happy to put shit out there, have the conversations with people that like follow or are interested or not. And it's easy. My fucking family stays updated. You know, my friends know what's up.
But honestly, all day long, all of your friends, we all pick on you because you're wealthy.
All day.
Does it ever get annoying?
It's funny because I was ready for it because I would hear, I always say this, like, I forget who said it, some podcast somewhere, but the happiest person makes 20% more than their friends. They're doing just a little better. If everybody makes 50 grand and you're making 60,
yeah,
and every once in a while you buy the round of drinks,
yeah,
or you have the slightly better like entry-level Mercedes, whatever it is, that's the guy that's the happiest. Because if you're the way poor dude, you're fucked because you're like, you sure feel inadequate.
Sure.
But the side that no one talks about, if you're the way rich dude, there's a weird level of inadequacy you feel because, I mean, my friends are just assholes. So they fuck with me, but they're they're also amazing. So it's perfect.
Everybody loves you,
right? I love
it. You get a lot of shit.
Yeah, and I love it. But I was just kind of ready for it because, like I said, people said that like, if you stay with that same crew you came up with, you either are gonna get hated on and sure, whatever, joked around with, or sure, like you move on and like be with a bunch of assholes that you didn't come up with, which I'm not gonna do.
I don't see you making that move.
I'm not doing that. So all the jokes. And they're deservedly so. They don't joke about like, you have so much money, how dare you? It's like, you have so much money and you're still a cheap asshole. That's mainly the jokes. You know what I mean?
It's so true. It's
like,
so true.
Like when I do buy the meal, it's like, whoa, oh my God. You know, these fucking assholes.
I just love that you're a real like, choose your own adventure on when you're ready to splurge. And when the thriftiness pops up. And
yeah,
like,
it's hard.
I love looking at
it. I got to crack the code. Once like I crack the code, machine. I'll tell you.
It's like a slot machine. I just see like thrifty rolling around. I see baller rolling around. Like, where's it going to land? Because yep, you never know what it's going to be. So, okay. I know this more than anybody. And this is something after interviewing hundreds of professionals. This is something that goes through all of us down to the bone. If I'm not this guy, then who am I going to be? And worrying about that will make all of us stay at the party 2 years too long. So I know there had to be a big part of you that when you're thinking of, you're talking about this with Heather, obviously, because you guys are, you know, beyond husband and wife, you're best friends and business partners and have done so much together. But I know that it's resonating or rolling around in your head. If I'm not Biggie, concert guy, good fight entertainment guy, band manager guy, who the fuck am I? How long did it take you to realize that you could let that title go? Because it's fucked me several times in my life. If I'm not the guy in the band,
yep,
that was my entire identity, yep, as a kid. If I'm not the fucking artist, who am I? If I'm not the guy who's doing the number one podcast about design, who am I? Like, I've had to struggle to let that go before. It'll make you stay at the party too long.
Yeah, I admit I had those thoughts, but I've had them for a long time because, you know, I mean, being a goal-driven person, like, We set goals, like literal number goals where mm-hmm, we were going to stop working
mm-hmm,
and far surpass them mm-hmm, and kept working. So it's just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? How long am I going to do this? Like, I already do feel a little old when I'm, you know, talking to some of these younger bands, you know, and you know, they'll talk about like, oh man, I can't imagine what shows were like then. And it's like when I was on tour and I'm like, Jesus, you
know,
like,
yeah, I know.
I'm not talking about fucking the first Madball show or some shit or an AF shows back in the day. It's like talking about Throwdown shows.
You know? Right, right. That doesn't seem that long ago.
It's not. Oh, it's fucking funny. But I've just, it used to be my everything. Like it was all wrapped up and it's just not. It's just, I don't know. I don't, it's gotten to the point when the first thing I do when I wake up isn't like freak out about my email.
Right.
And that's, shit like that is just a big telltale sign to me. You know, who I am is being with my family first and foremost. I absolutely love it more than I thought I even would, to be totally honest. Like mm-hmm, when we heard that we were pregnant the first time, all I thought about was like, how's it gonna affect my job? You know, like I'm gonna have to like find all these hours in a day to raise a kid. Like what the fuck? And it's
yeah,
crazy to think about that now, 9 years later.
Hey, as somebody who doesn't have kids, it's always been that thought that stopped me.
Yeah.
And whenever it feels real good, that's the mindset I go,
yeah,
pull out, Bricky. It's not worth it. Don't, yeah, don't go the extra mile.
Yeah. I mean, there's many other reasons why it's fucking crazy. But, and I just moved to the other side of it. I realized yeah, that like, I am absolutely much more identified by my relationships than what I do with my email. And those I'm tight with in the music industry, I'm going to be tight with.
For sure.
It's proven.
You've made lifelong friends.
Yeah. You know.
But there is a way that we define ourselves, though.
For sure.
And Southern California is possibly the worst spot in America for, hey, this is my bud so-and-so. Hey, man, what's up? What do you do?
Yeah.
Like, that is the number. After you tell somebody your name out here, the follow-up question is, so what do you do?
Yeah.
And
I'll say I'm retired. It sounds awesome.
So I told people I retired from design, but I'm like, but I'm not wealthy. I took another job.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't fully gotten there. Like, oh, this is my new thing. I'm now going to do this. because I don't want to. I want to enjoy some chill time. And I've already been chilling more than I used to. And like I was joking around with people I've talked to, it's like, yeah, I'm working less, but it's like there's no day where I just like sat home and watched 4 hours of Netflix.
No.
Or 4 minutes of Netflix. You know, I've never turned on TV in the daytime in my career. And I always joke around, like, with this big TV in my office, I don't even know where the remote is. Like, legitimately not being funny. It's just, there it is, you know.
Well, it fills the spot on the wall.
Exactly. What do I do with all this fucking wall stuff, dude? I got to redecorate in here.
Nah, this stays up forever. But, you know, you wrote out the pause-demic, as I like to call it, and you stayed busy. Like, you didn't go nuts. You found several other things to do around, you know, your family and other projects that you and Heather have taken on.
Real estate, we did a ton of shit.
I mean, you became, one might say, a maintenance man, taking up with all these different properties. But, like, you stayed busy. So my question for you is this. If the pandemic happens and you were forced into a solid 12 months off, do you think you would have found the self-confidence to do this? Because I don't.
No. The dirty voice in my head being like, are you over this?
Yeah.
Do you want to do this?
Yeah.
Are you over this? Was never, it could get drowned out because my phone would ring 7 minutes later or whatever. But in that year off, it was, wow, you're enjoying this. You are still busy. You're still fulfilled. You're still happy. Mm-hmm. You still talk to who you want to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But when life comes back, when you start booking tours again, you're going to remember that you fucking love this and you fucking made this and this is your shit. So then when life started coming back after the year off and I started dreading the call and I started hating the email and I started like being not excited about like massive tours we were confirming for my bands. I'm like, this isn't cool.
That was the red flag.
This is the red flag. And then, you know, one of my main dudes, Vitalo, who's like, I don't know. Our relationship is kind of similar to me and Conroy, you know, maybe a less extent. Maybe like he doesn't look at me as a mentor like I look at Paul in terms of that, but like very tight. Brought him up from not having bands to having this sick roster and is a full on manager, does not need my help, you know. He had like a come to Jesus with me of just being like, dude, doesn't seem like you're fully in. I'm fully in. Him saying, I'm fully in. I need to be fully in. And he's been approached many times by other companies and some fucking jerk off.
He's got a hell of a roster.
Yeah, he's just sick. He's a rad dude. Some jerk offs approach him, and every time he would tell me, he'd be like, oh, just so you know, like, had this thing, didn't talk to him. Oh, these guys approached me, had to take the meeting, see what's up. You know, very forthcoming. And then recently, it's just like, dude, I got approached by, I'll use names. He's like, I got approached by 5B. You know, they're the management company that does Slipknot and a bunch of other bands.
Yeah,
it's like, it kind of sounds good, you know, and what do you think, you know? And we just had this rad, amazing conversation. He was extremely righteous and extremely like cool about it. But him and the bands that he and I did together, which he ended up taking over the vast, vast majority towards the end. But I mean, he took those bands with him to 5B. Some of those bands were bands I'd worked with for a long time. And it was just a very like, whoa, like, I never thought I wouldn't manage that with some of these bands, you know, like that's crazy.
Yeah.
But what it really did was kick me in the ass to realize that like at some point I would have never let that happen. There's no way. If somebody talked to them, I would have fucking fought. I would have changed splits. I would have given them percentages of bands just for the perception of like, oh, Good Fight and Biggie aren't losing bands, you know, that weakness, whatever. And instead of that, I felt relief. I felt like, Vitalo is going to go kill it at this new place.
And you don't have to feel bad about him.
I don't have to feel bad about him. I don't have to worry about those bands. They'll be totally taken care of. And not that those bands, I always like to say, like, I don't think anyone's sitting around worrying about me and what I, you know, I just felt good knowing that everyone would be fine. But it shined a big light knowing that like, fuck, instead of being bummed and trying to save this, I was like, I was kind of relieved, you know? And like, yeah, kind of bummed. Like, there's always a little part of it where it's like, oh, damn, that's crazy. But he was so cool about it and so great about it. And he's going to such a rad place that it's like, how could I be bummed on this?
Right.
I'm fucking stoked for him. I'm stoked. When those bands do great, I had a part in it, you know, like it really feels great. But it just, you know, that was a chunk that went and it made me look at everything. And I'm just like, I have to get out. I have to get out. And I had a conversation with Conroy, my man.
I knew this interview was going to go to that moment somehow.
And I'm just like, dude, because I would like joke about it, and we did jiu-jitsu all the time, you know, a joke. I'm just like, I don't know, I'm just gonna fucking retire, you know. And he would just look at me like I'm crazy. He's just like, he's just a serial worker. He's, you know, he likened it to playing guitar. It's like, if I ever quit the band, I would still play my guitar.
Right.
That's his, him in business.
Right.
You know, and so you get to the idea of how he is. And that's just not me. Like, I wanted to make money and then go live my life, you know. But I had this call with Paul, and he's just, I thought he was gonna like, not talk me into it, you know what I mean? But just like really hammer down, like, work is important for X, Y, and Z. You gotta, you know, identify as this, da, da, da. And I give him.
Because Paul sees work as almost like a spiritual thing.
Oh, it's his. He will work until he's dead. Yeah. Whether for, but not in like a gross way. His life is balanced. He's all good. But it's just what he loves, and he's fucking phenomenal.
But he's at like business. Found himself through totally. Business
several times, dude.
Yeah, it's
gnarly.
Insane.
It's fucking gnarly. Tune it now. He's crazy, but. I go through my spiel, which is very thought out at this point. It's been, if you include pandemic and now coming back a little bit, it's been 15 months where I've like thought about this. So when I go like, this is where my head is, and this is what I think about this band and this person at my company and this band and this relationship. And like I barf out 30 minutes of talking, and I'm waiting for him to be like, yeah, but you got to see it through or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, first and foremost, you got to kill music. You got to get the fuck out of music. Like, first thing. And then we went on to some other, like, awesome advice. But, like, even he was just like, it's time to go. And so I started looking at how it would shake out and what it would mean for certain bands and what it would mean for certain people at my company. And I had a call with one of my guys at the office, and he was in, like, this... I mean, I'm just such a huge believer that everything happens for a reason and timing is everything. I'm talking to him about, you know, my situation, and he's feeling in a rut, and I'm just like, dude, go take these bands. Just do your own thing. I did it. It was fucking awesome. Like, you know, I didn't start the name and all that shit, but like I reconfigured the model for myself, and that's the only reason why I got to where I got for like in terms of finances, you know. And he's the best manager at the company, in my opinion, and he's going to start his own thing. And he just needed someone to be like, yeah, you're good, dude. All good. You know,
but
and
a take, lot of us
take bands
that.
We did together with him and just make more money.
But, you know, a lot of us that take an unconventional path to where we want to go, you need the Conroys, or now you need the older, you know, Biggie that's like, do this, you can do that, because there's not a way to like go on YouTube and watch a video or read a book that explains how to do what we've all done. You need that older kid. You need that older guy that has some life, you know, has put some miles in to be like, you're capable of doing this.
Yeah.
That voice resonates with you. And I'm sure you had to feel weird that as the world is going towards normal, there's a part of your brain that's like, I mean, obviously you want the pandemic to be done,
right?
But there's a part of you that's kind of dreading. Yeah, but normal means X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Normal means the phone. Normal means the laptop is always, you know, 3 feet from me.
Yeah.
So there had to be a weird part of you that's kind of dreading that return. And I think that it's compelling that you realized the time was up when you started to, I'm not in love with this anymore. And I've always said the game of business is 100% parallel to dating. And we all know when you've been in a relationship with somebody that you remember the first date you met her, you remember how amazing they made your world feel, but you remember the time when you like kissed each other and like,
that was weird.
There's nothing behind it anymore.
And then you can't change back.
You know? No, you can't.
And that's
go
what
back.
I knew. I knew like, oh, maybe if I go grab a band, I'll feel better. Or if I delegate a little more, so I have this off my plate, it's not that, you know?
So and, is there a part of you though, because I know you like to win. Is there a part of you that does know that you're a guy in his early 40s? You're
41. Let's just, you know, early 40s could be like 43.
You know? Dude, I'm clawing onto mid 40s. I don't want to let go.
48's mid 40s, right?
I'm not 48. Let's not start that.
But rumor. I'll be mid 40s until I'm 49. Trust me.
I'm going to try to roll early 40s then. But there is a part of you that you're not Johnny Hardcore, right? Like you're, because we all know the guy that like. Dude, you still go to shows?
Yeah.
Like you didn't find anything else?
Right.
And so because you're not that guy, because bands all inevitably get to a moment of chaos where they can't keep it together, because a band is the most, I mean, being married is a walk through the park versus being in a band.
Yeah.
Like it's insane.
One crazy person versus four others.
Oh, it's totally nuts. I mean, in a real management team or a record label, it has to constantly rebuild. It has to constantly evolve. The fact that something like Epitaph is still buzzing since I have been a kid.
But they've evolved.
They have evolved.
Big time. They signed.
Totally different than where they were when we were kids. But they've evolved. They've rebuilt themselves. You know, they still have that prestige. Is there a part of you, if we're being honest, it just makes it easy that you don't have to try to have lightning strike twice?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, for me in business, like my evolvement like, wasn't just like, I just manage bands. That's it. Like I tried a ton of shit. I started a small booking agency. I had my hands in a merch company. We had a ticketing company. Anything that I saw out there that people were, I had a fucking pin company, you know, like
yeah.
people are doing this. I bet I can do that and make some money. And sometimes it worked great and sometimes it didn't, you know? Right. But that was part of my evolution too. But I don't know. It's, I just think that the way it worked, the way it went down, it could never happen again for me. Like the timing of everything, the bands I started with was just like a freak lucky timing scenario where it's like I moved from tour manager to manager of Every Time I Die. With that, I talked to Between the Buried and Me, who I met because of touring with Every Time I Die, and said, dude, I manage bands now. Can we want to do this? And worked with them for 10 years. Then a guy at Good Fight wasn't working out with Terror, so I had Terror. And then Bless the Fall needed a new manager because, I mean, they need a new manager, and their singer was someone I've known forever, and I got in there, and that was like my four forever. And I just jump-started making a lot of money immediately with that. A roster of those four bands, none of them are arena bands, none of them whatever, but they are earners, and they've toured
yeah.
a lot and made a lot of money on their record deals and their publishing deals, and we just they could tour whenever and make a lot of money. And then that finally led to the next chapter of like, oh, grab this kid who has these bands. That's great. Or I heard, you know, The Story So Far needs a manager, and got them when they were like the opening band at Chain Reaction, mm-hmm. and, you know, worked with them forever. And the first show they booked after I was working with them was a sold out Palladium show that sold out immediately. Like had these like great runs with some of these bands, you know, all the way to Taking Vitalo and the new wave of like Turnstile and Knock Loose, these like super cool bands. It was just so much right place, right time, and always being there ready to take on more work.
See, that's it. You were there. You were present. You were living it. You were jumping on planes and you were going to the shows and you were standing there and you were meeting people. Like, no offense, and to do my job here to push back a little bit, I don't see that happening again for you. You're not present anymore.
I'm not there. Like, I don't know. When fucking I got the invite to eat with Anthony Green and Brendan from Circa Survive, it wasn't to like go manage their band. It was like, hey, we're having these, we're out at Coachella. Anthony's playing like solo, you know, and we're out at Coachella. We wanted to have like a dinner hang. It was very like kind of convoluted. It got like sent to me from a friend. I was like, they want to just hang. And I'm like, okay. I drove immediately to Coachella and like had this meeting, which then ended up saying, listen, I want to manage your band, and then being on a plane the next day or 2 days later to Philly to talk to the rest of the guys.
Yeah.
That would not happen on many, many levels today. Like, there's just no way. And it's not a slight, like, I don't fucking need the money. It's not that. It's when I heard that at that time, I'm like, if I get this band, it will change my life. It will put me in a different world in terms of, like, who I'll talk to.
Yep.
It will financially bring in a fuckload of money.
Yeah.
And it did all those things. And I was just hell-bent on getting it and doing whatever I had to do to do that, you know? And fuck, it's amazing. And those are some of my I'll be friends with those dudes forever, you know? It was one of the very, very hard calls that ended up being amazing was with Anthony, you know, of course. And I agree, though. It just, you know, hell or high water, if I had to do this again, it wouldn't be the same, you know? Like, I could grab a band and start trying to do the thing, but to, like, at one point having, like, I don't know, probably at my peak, I probably was involved with, like, 15 bands at one time, even though I wasn't, like, day-to-day always doing everything, but, like, I was definitely getting part of the income, you know?
Hey, man, that's a lot of revenue.
And you know, it all just adds up after years and years, but it ain't happening again, and I don't have the desire to have it happen again. Even fun things, like, oh, like, my friend's throwing a festival, and, like, my bands are playing, I'm just like, fuck, that just sounds horrible right now, you know? And it's not jaded guy, it's just I don't have the passion for it. And I didn't want to fake the funk, and I didn't want to sit in my office and just collect the money, which, you know, easily could have happened. I was getting passive income from several bands that I never talked to, and passive income from companies that I wasn't doing anything for, but I started and, you know, helped create the start of it. And I just pulled the plug on everything. This band is yours. This band is yours. As long as they want to stay, which it seems like they all do. You can have this half of my half of this company. And I just walked away. And it's not like I'm so righteous. Oh my God. It's just, I wanted to be done. I didn't want my toe in it. I didn't want anyone to talk to me and be like, what's up with this band? And I'd be like, oh, I don't know. I'm like still, and she's like, dude, I'm out. And it was wonderful and I loved it and I wouldn't change anything, but I'm on to the next. I'm not even sure what the next is per se. That's everyone's first question. What's happening with Every Time I Die? That's everyone's first question because I'm so synonymous with them.
Yeah, you're a member.
Yeah. And then the second question is, what are you going to do now? You know? And I'm not positive in terms of what I'm going to do for work. I know my days fill up with my family obligations and my training obligations. I'm going to do a lot of jiu-jitsu. I'm going to play some cards. I'm going to hang with my fam. I'm going to just do me and do whatever I want, you know, and spend time at my properties. And I've always heard from my whole life that I've listened to, you know, I always like to say, I read this book, but I listened to the podcast, you know, the 2021 version. I read this book. Own the books and I intend to read them all. And I don't. I either audiobook or listen to the pod.
Well, hey, you got time now.
Yeah. I still won't read. But I've listened to successful people and whether they are older or, you know, like kind of the do's and don'ts after you get success. And every person that made some money or had some success, it's always like, I wish I stopped earlier. I wish I enjoyed the money I made more.
Right.
And all those like stereotypical things you hear. I wish I hung with my family more and I wish I spent more time with my parents as they got older. And it's like, I'm just going to fucking listen. I'm going to do these things. I'm going to enjoy the money I have and not fucking be an asshole about it, but like just not work. That's to me the freedom of having the money is just freedom. It's all it is, you know. Enjoy that freedom. Hang with my amazing wife. Raise my awesome kids, enjoy my wonderful mom as she gets older, enjoy the houses we've built, just, you know, lean into the hard work that you put in and the fruits of the labor instead of just always feeling like it's got to be the grind, it's got to be next, you're identified by work and it's like, I talk to people like, oh, I couldn't do it, I'm too young, I'm too busy, and it's like, that's cool, maybe, I'm 41, I'm not that fucking young, but I'm not that old, and my kids love me right now. In 10 years, my two daughters, when they're fucking 15 or whatever, 14 and 18, they might not give two shits about me.
If karma's a thing, they're going to hate you.
Exactly. In 5 years, they might not care about me. But for now, like, fuck, I should really take that in, right?
You should,
like, I should take that in. Every parent I've talked to is just says, dude, embrace it. It flies by. And I'm watching it fly by. You know, it's flying by. But why not embrace it? Why not listen to all these stupid, if you're not going to take in the information and listen to it, why not just listen to what they're saying? And they're all saying, enjoy it and take time with your family. And like mom, come with us up to the mountains. And Heather's family, come on in. We're flying to Florida, you know, like that might sound like, oh, it must be nice. But it's like, yeah, it's fucking nice. And I'm going to do it instead of just like keep working to what? Have another decimal increase or whatever it is. Like
you've made your goal.
We made it.
What more?
The goal now is to enjoy it.
I mean,
if I'm bored in 5 years, I'm not like signing away like a fucking contract that you cannot earn anymore. I'll start something or work somewhere.
But you'll get involved.
Do something.
If you do something else, it'll be what you're into at that moment.
Fuck yeah.
Instead of riding this thing that you got into when you were a teenager.
Yeah.
Just because that's where you started at. But let me push back a little bit.
Push.
Because to me, the magic of live music is this. The music that's playing in the arena goes down. The lights go down. The crowd goes up, right? Like there's music and there's lights. Now there's no lights. There's no music. And that intro song plays. And, you know, these five fucking knuckleheads that you know.
Nickelheads.
Rubbing those nickels together. Those five guys walk out onto the stage and become a band. And there is a contact buzz there, and you knowing that you made that night happen, knowing that it's tids the season and everybody's there because of the hard work of you and your team that rests on your shoulders, or knowing that ETID has now hit another milestone in their career when everybody thought that they wouldn't make it this far, and years later still grinding, have an official day in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Like there's something about that moment of taking the stage that in my mind, that is the magic trick that is music. That's gone.
I will miss a lot of what I did. I will miss a lot. I'm not saying like fucking c'est la vie at all. Yeah. I'm saying the process of how I got to where I know I'll be comfortable with it. You know, for every complaint I have about music, about needy band members and explaining why this should happen when I know we're going to do what we say 95% of the time. So why go through the gymnastics of just talking about it for 3 hours, you know? all the stuff that is annoying and constantly being in contact or hearing the whining or having a flight do this or a visa go that way, that's all horrible. But dude, then there's the night where I got to take my wife to the Grammys. I got to,
that's pretty awesome.
I got to go, I mean, every year to a sold out show at the Shrine because Circa's in town. It's just like a no brainer. They're going to sell at the Shrine. I got to fly to Buffalo and have these festivals that like legitimately had an impact on a city when it would occur, you know, and everything in between, like signing major label deals for hardcore bands that are like unthinkable amounts of money for bands that sound like fucking hardcore bands, you know, and all the stupid stuff in between, you know, like my lawyer would always laugh and just be like, I don't know where these deals are coming from. You know, back when this jokes were happening, it's like the mid-2000s or like mid-teens, you know, 2015, 16, 17. It's like, these deals look like fucking deals from the 90s. Like, how are you getting this kind of money for these bands? You know, like, I loved that at that time. But now I don't. I just don't. Like, if right now, if someone's like, oh, here's this band. Everybody wants them. All the labels. You just got to do the song and dance and get the money where you want it, whatever. Sounds horrible. It just sounds horrible, you know? And for all the things I will miss and those moments I'll miss, there are many, 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 many more that I just will not miss, you know?
So to go back to our very first ever interview, the first time we ever hung out, when you were more in it than you have been, back then you said the juice was worth the squeeze. And now you're just saying it's not the case.
I just think my fridge is full of juice. Like, not to sound like an asshole.
Oh, that's an asshole quote.
But the juice is worth the squeeze when you're thirsty, man. And I'm not thirsty, you know?
Yeah.
I'd liken it to the fighting quote of like, it's hard to go run the miles when you wake up on silk sheets. And like, I don't fully believe that, like, in every way. But like, yes, it does factor in. Like, there were times where like, the tour meant a lot because if I got it, I mean, I would make money. And if I made the money, I could maybe save more money. And then if I landed this band, I'd go buy a house, which I landed Circa Survive and I moved. Like, that's how much I knew that was changing my life. Yeah. I moved from fucking Santa Ana to Costa Mesa. And while it's 3 miles, it's a big east side Costa Mesa.
Hey, man.
It's a big difference.
The last house was great. And when you're like, I'm moving, and I was like, oh, I wonder if things aren't going well, because it was such a nice house. I'm like, why does anybody leave that fucking house? Then it came to the new house. I'm like, oh, things are going well.
Yes.
But I understand all of that, because just being in the music industry, like, I realize it's just a crapshoot, right?
Yeah.
And it's so much right place, right time. And one of the things I've always loved about interviewing you and having you being a reoccurring character on the show is that you don't wax poetic like you fucking had an edge over everybody and that you knew better than everybody. You're just so brutally honest. When people are like, what's your tip on being successful? But you're like, I don't know, like, get up at 8 o'clock and work hard and hope that it goes well.
Yeah.
Like, you don't try to reframe it. Like, you're not Tony Robbins, and, you know, like, you didn't believe your own hype. And I think that's what's always made you very approachable, because you kind of realized that it was a lot of hard work, a lot of perseverance, but it was a lot of being present and being there. And like we talked earlier in the podcast, like, you know, just being available, accessible at all times. And as you go through life and you're not as thirsty, it does get hard to do the 20-hour day. Like, I used to be a nonstop working machine until I realized that that wasn't what really mattered. And then I started setting limits. And then I started to say, in my mind, because I'm a designer, I know the best way that everything can go. But making it the best means days on days, and sometimes you get a return and sometimes you don't. And now I just look at it as, what's the best that I can do with the time that's available? That kills part of my brain, because I know what perfection looks like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I stop at the same time every night. I'm present with my wife. I enjoy the things in my life that I enjoy, and I reprioritize my life. A lot of people don't get there. But as I said earlier, the world of dating is a lot like the world of business. And when you do break up with somebody and then you see somebody else that's fucking your girl, it's a little bit weird.
Yep.
And you're getting ready to see a lot of dudes fucking all your chicks.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
And that's going to be a weird thing, because I know you. I know your ego that's well earned. You're not an egomaniac, but you do have a lot of self-confidence. That's probably the better way to say it. But like, there's going to be somebody that's running E-Tid.
Yeah.
On the next album, there's going to be somebody that books their tour, and you're going to always go, I don't know if I would have done that, man.
I won't be able to stop myself from that. That's for sure.
Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed part one of today's episode. Don't worry, I'm not going to cut it off or fade it down like I normally do, but I had to show up as a friendly reminder that typically this would be where the podcast would fade down, and then the second part would only be available to subscribers of AID.network as members of the Circle of Trust. That is how I monetized the podcast since 2014 and made it my full-time career. So if you enjoy today's podcast and you want to hear more like this, don't worry. I've got an archive of over 1,300 different episodes where you can hear all kinds of conversations just like today, where the subject matter, where the person who's being interviewed isn't getting these bullshit, like, well, where did you get started? What is your inspiration? Fuck that. I'm a high-level working professional. I've been all around the entertainment industry, all around the music industry, all around the art industry. Whoever I talk to, I show out research and tell the real fucking story. None of this podcast, amateur bullshit. I'm the real deal, and that's why I started doing it professionally back in 2014, way before a regular person could have a podcast as their full-time rig, and that was made possible by the people that believed in me, that believed in the first 100 podcasts that I did absolutely for free. Those are the members of the Circle of Trust over at AID.network. So if you're finding this for the first time today and you're like, where's the rest of these? They're in the archives. I've learned how to monetize my podcast, and I would advise you to do the same if you have one. Head over to AID.network, become a member of the Circle of Trust, where typically you could hear part two of whatever we're talking about, whoever I'm talking with. Today it happens to be my buddy Biggie. But if you also like good times, and today's episode is speaking to you, Biggie is one of my co-hosts on Hammer Time, which is a podcast that I produce for the Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club. Comes out every Friday, once a week. Brian and Hammer from Violent Gentlemen, as well as our friend, famous tattoo artist Gustavo Jaimes, Biggie. We all get together and just talk shop. It's available every Friday. You can find it on its own podcast feed called Hammer Time, or you can find the full version over at the Circle of Trust. I just wanted to explain to you what was happening, and I have the right to, because I'm giving away the second part of today's show for free. Let's get started with part two. It's episode 1359 of Adventures in Design, featuring Biggie's exit interview.
Unless something changes, it's staying with my current team, you know? And so it just feels, it feels just like it should. And you know, you mentioned ego, which I always say, like, I have an ego. I think everyone has an ego to some degree.
You have to be successful.
Yeah. And my ego was, it wasn't with me in terms of like, oh, well, I have this and I have that. It's like my company and what we were doing and what I was portraying to artists, what, you know, is what I took pride in, you know, and I have no regrets with how all that went down. And I think it's a great time to leave, and it'll never be like the perfect time, but with a couple people feeling a certain way and you know, Vitaly leaving, it's just like, man, this is the time. Like, if any, we're off pandemic, it's not that busy. I know this person will handle this band, and this person will handle that band, and these guys will stay here, and this band won't change that. It's just like, it's just the time. And while it will be weird, especially with you know, some of the bands I'm like the tightest with, like Circa and E-Tid, it'll be weird, but it's still weird to this day when I see the Story So Far announce something, and I've worked with them in years.
Yeah,
it's just part of me and part of like what I did at some point, you know, and that's all good. And it you know, it's funny, when I was having all the conversations, I was so dreading talking to E-Tid.
The conversations when you were telling people that you were
This, I don't know what day of the week it is, but it's Sunday, and this started Friday at 2 p.m. Like, I wasn't Friday
morning. People listen to this on Monday. I'm expediting this to the top of the pile. So,
Friday morning, I didn't wake up saying, I'm retiring today.
I love that, though.
But it was on my mind. Obviously, this clearly thought out. I had the call on Thursday with Paul, so it was on my mind.
Yeah.
And then I just, my partner Tim calls me just feeling away, and I'm like, you know what, dude? I'm about to say something that's fucking crazy, and I've thought about it for 15 months. And I put my arms up. I'm like, I'm retiring from the music industry. Biggie. And he's like, what? That's not what I was calling about. Like, kind of like freaks out. I'm like, dude, I know it sounds like I just like, am getting off the phone with a brash decision, but I've thought about it for 15 months. You're the first person I'm telling, and that's what's up. And I, you know, I went through why and why I feel that way, and had a great call with him, and let him know that like, he's fucking ready, and you know, he's the best manager I've ever worked with, and he's fine, and no one's gonna leave. Watch, no one's gonna leave. You're gonna be great, and you know, slowly, who knows what, how it all ends up, but that's how it looks like it's unfolding. I just started going down my list. I then called Jackie, who I partnered with a bunch of bands on, who's like my fucking right hand, and she was you know, very like, what? Like, kind of like, I don't want to say scared, surprised, probably a little scared. Her and I are just like extremely tight, and I love her. And I told her that I have a lot of influence with ETID, and I will tell them that you should manage them, because, dude, I don't want the sharks to circle. I don't want them to go to some fucking guy. Like, I want them, they love Jackie, they trust Jackie, they at least for a while are set with touring and everything.
She understands
like that.
Their unique dynamic.
Oh my god, to a T. She works so closely with all of them. And I just went down the line, I called Carl, my partner, I called everyone at the company, I called my booking agents I'm tightest with, you know. I'm talking to members of bands, you know, FaceTime this. So some are like sad, and the overwhelming response is like, I'm stoked for you, like about time, or like you deserve it. It's like so supportive, and like I have some messages that like I've saved and like mean the world to me. But I go through that whole day, and I'm telling Heather, you know, she's just like, what are you doing? You're on the phone. It's like, I didn't pick up the kids like I should have. Like, I'm just doing, like, I'm on the phone, you know. And she's like, well, what did ETID say? I'm like, I haven't talked to ETID. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, how have you not talked to them? And they're like the headliner in my mind of like, I don't know. Like, cause once I tell them, it's done. Like, it's fucking done.
Were you worried that they would catch it from somebody else and then feel like,
no, well, I was moving so fast that like, I knew that wasn't the issue. I was just worried for myself. Like, I was selfishly worried at how they would take it. And like, not like, what are we gonna do? I knew that wouldn't be the case, but it's like, it just, they just mean the world to me, like as humans and as a career. And it was like, it's like, that was me officially like signing off, ending a huge chapter of my life. And I like got to that point where I'm like, fuck, once I make this call, like I was calling some people that like didn't need to know right then, you know, because I was avoiding ETID. I thought that my friend was just like making dinner. He's like, what the fuck? Like, super stoked, but like I could tell he was just like, why are you calling me Friday night to talk to you about this?
Right,
it's just
because,
like, well, I could call you Monday, but I just want to, you know, whatever. I wanted to prolong telling ETID. So I finally, it's fucking nighttime, I finally just text them. Like, I need to get on the phone. And
who do you talk to?
The four main guys.
Okay.
Jordan Buckley, Keith Buckley, Steve Michikay, Andy Williams. Just them.
What a fucking crew.
Yeah. Usually their drummer, who's now an official member of the band, and Jackie are on threads.
Yeah.
And like, I talk easily the least on the thread. It's just business. Jackie's like running with it. So I text all them, and it's just like, whoa, you know, like Andy was traveling, so he didn't get back, and Jordan's just freaking out. Like, hey, if, you know, everyone's like writing, like, yeah, I'm available. Jordan's like, if they don't answer, can we talk? Because like, I'm not gonna be able to sleep. This is weird. Like, what the fuck? You know, I'm like,
yeah, Jordan couldn't deal with that anxiety, yeah, not knowing what's up.
He's like, I'm gonna freak out.
Yeah.
So Andy finally gets back. We get on the phone. Like, I don't even know how late it was. Probably 10 o'clock my time, 1 o'clock their time. You know, Andy like had been driving all day. He's like fucking in Atlanta or something for whatever the hell he's doing, you know? And I just said the same thing to them. I was like, guys, I fucking love you, and I'm about to say a crazy sentence, but I'm retiring from the music industry. And I started fucking crying.
Sure.
My voice started cracking all crazy, and they were just ETID about it. Just perfect. The perfect amount of like jokes to super sincere, amazing praise, and you deserve it. The thanks, all the amazing, it just couldn't have gone better.
Yeah.
Like, they're just amazing, and it was like the perfect cap to, you know, a long hard day, but like a long hard whatever it is, 13 years. And I did it on my little walk out here on the bay, and I came back in as the and Heather knew what I was doing, you know, I was on the phone with ETID, and I just fucking collapsed into her chest and cried, like,
yeah,
sobbed, dude.
Yeah.
And she, I'm getting welled up now. She's just like, what's wrong? Like, oh my god, you know, like. And I'm just like, this is it. Like, that just ended like a fucking crazy story. Like, and not just ETID, but like, it just all came out. Like, I was full, like like full sob, yeah, ugly crying into her shirt. My kids are like, what is going on? Like, they do not, they've so,
who rarely, beat up daddy on his walk?
Yeah, like, what is happening? And I'm like buried in another chair, like, everything's okay, kids, you know. Like, just I was fucked, and it was such a drain, dude. And I don't know, like, after that, like, I felt so good after the telling ETID, and I got kind of quivery on the phone with them, and I was, yeah, like, oh, that's crazy. But like, kind of me at this point in my life, we all know I cry over everything. But then the dump with Heather, and I'm just like, man, like, this meant everything to me. Like, this is such a huge part of my life for so long. For the most consistent thing in my life has been music and management and work. And
outside
like,
of your family, this is it.
Yeah,
this is the biggest thing that you've put your most amount of energy in.
Yeah.
You're the most successful, most defined. Like, I don't know who you are if that doesn't make you cry.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate enough with my career to have these moments. And like, I had them in the band. I've had several of them. But like, I remember when we used to do Crazy Fest back in the day in Louisville. I would look out at some point every weekend. I would look out and see how many people there were having a good time. And I would just get so choked up knowing that it was me and my small group of dummies that put that together.
Yeah.
And everybody's having fun because of our hard work. And, you know, sometimes I'll just think about the podcast and like, you know, where people listen to it and how they consume it. And it just puts a lump in the back of your throat. And to me, that means that you're doing something that you're supposed to be doing. And crying when you close one of those chapters, like, I remember when I got hired by Disney to do work for them, I told Beth, I'm like, when these projects are done for Disney, I'm done as a designer. Because like you, like Paul said, you got to quit it. Because if you keep a foot in and you keep a foot out, it just gets sloppy and nasty. Yeah. And I remember like turning in my last stuff and then just telling her like, I don't think I'm going to write them back about the next project. Like, I just think that I'm done. And I just remember being like, wow, there were so many moments in my life when I wanted to be the best at this. And then I let it go. And it's just such a weird sigh of relief to get to that moment, you know, where you're like, I've gotten all out of this. I've gotten everything out of this that I came here for and so much more. I'm ready to do something else. And I hope that most people get to feel that, because I feel like a lot of people get into something, they get at that level of success, and then they can't let go. Because why would you, right? That's the American dream. Like, work really hard, become really successful, make a lot of money, and then just do that thing. Just beat the fuck out of it. Just do it and do it and do it. And the idea of like, well, I did it and I'm ready to do something else and letting go of the will, like, that's just bizarre to like half of the population.
Yeah, and going back to all the shit I've listened to, I've heard enough people to be like, especially in this era where entrepreneurship is so sexy and it's like the thing to do, you also have to know when it's done or when to enjoy the fruits. You know, like when Heather sold her company, which was, it was massive. It was, you know, Forbes contacting her, trying to do interviews with her and shit. Like, it was a big fucking deal. And when it happened, it was fucking crazy when it ended. And she has less of an attachment to it than I do in my band. You know, she didn't have the relationships I did, but like, she killed herself for that company for like 6 years and then it was just done. And like you're talking about, she saw it go to, someone bought it, saw the name not live how she wanted to. And it's gnarly, but she was able to get out and enjoy, you know, and of course, cause she's a psycho, started something else that's also killing it. But
Heather, in a way, she built like a business, right? Like, she just built like a full on business. Like, you built something that was an extension of your identity.
Yeah.
You were a kid slinging cotton for 18 Visions.
Yep.
And then you had a roster of 15 different bands, other managers working underneath you. Like, you built a small empire that was who you were.
Right.
Like, through and through. Like, when Heather met you, like, oh, I met this guy, Nick, and he's into bands, he's a punk rocker. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't something that you clocked out of. You were always that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I just think that the world has taught everyone that like life is work, you know, and you have to work in life and you do. And I don't like to live in a bubble and just be like, I'm sure people are listening and be like, yeah, asshole, I wouldn't work either if I didn't have to, you know. That's not what I'm saying. And it's hard for people maybe to understand, but it is not easy for someone that has worked, built something and identifies with, like you're saying, so much to just walk away. It's not easy. And that's why it took a pandemic and 15 months and fucking one of my main men leaving. Like, it took all these things for me to be like, fine. You know, like, the world's trying to tell me something.
But, you know, I ran the numbers in my early 40s. And I like looked at where I was at financially and what I was doing. And I kind of ran the numbers. I'm like, best case scenario, unless I get really, really lucky, I don't see me getting rich. I don't see me getting wealthy. Like, I just ran the numbers. And for what I enjoy
financially.
Doing financially, professionally, I don't see me becoming set. And so then I said, well, I have to then shift my focus. If I'm going to work this hard and never get like financially where my goals were, Where do I want to be mentally? And you were hanging out with me when I was going through sort of that like depression. Mm-hmm. And I figured out what I wanted to do, started doing it and just embracing that. And I'd have to say, last couple of years, been a way happier guy. Yeah. And by contact of that, been a more successful guy. But what I love about your story that is so relatable to me is when I've made all the biggest decisions in my life, and I'm talking like major relationship changes,
moving, career changes,
taking dogs that I've had an 18-year relationship with and deciding the day that they're no longer here on planet Earth, I've never planned the big decisions. I wake up, I live the day, and then I go, holy fuck, today's the day I'm doing it. And I love that you did that with this, because that truly means that you were trusting your instincts and that you didn't like put something on the calendar and you're like, oh, today's the day that I'm going to put Petey down. Like, I don't know how people can have like a family pet and be like, yeah, we scheduled their, you know, their bye-bye on Friday.
Yeah.
Like, I just woke up and, you know, the dog fell over in the backyard and I go, that's it. He can't stand on his own. Today's the day. Like, I love trusting the instincts, and I love that you woke up Friday not knowing that you were going to finally do something that you've been contemplating for probably the last 2 years. Like, there's something about that that I love so much, because it goes to show that you were trusting your influences. But, you know, because we are talking about this trend, and I've seen this a lot in guys and women in their 40s, I call it the mid-career crisis. It used to be a midlife crisis. Uh-huh. Where it was like a hot secretary and a Corvette. And now I've met a lot of people that in their 40s, they just switch careers. They like switch directions and when they're going to go into. So for you, somebody that was able to like reach the top of your profession, if like money doesn't buy us happiness, what did it buy you?
I mentioned it. It's freedom. It's the not worrying about the little things, because most people, I mean, you know, there are exceptions, but I wouldn't even try to talk about most people. I know.
Now, I just want to know your opinion.
When I feel rich, it's not when we buy a Rolls Royce or a fucking another house. That's all bullshit. Like, that is literal.
Rolls Royce did happen last week, by the way.
It did. Whatever. that's Heather's car. I drive an El Camino, for the record.
By the way, he fucking snuck into our Tuesday night podcast recording in a Rolls Royce. And I even said, is that Heather's car out front? It looks different. And you just go, yeah, you didn't tell me.
I was like, yeah, it is. You know, she got a Rolls, whatever. I drive a $9,000 El Camino, so.
And a Tesla X.
That's not when I don't feel wealthy when I walk into the Newport house. I feel wealthy when Heather and I decide, like, let's go on a date real quick. And we have two babysitters comes for both our kids, so they have this great time.
Yeah.
That costs, you know, $30 an hour. And then we go have this super nice meal and get a super nice massage and whatever it is. And like, before I know it, we spent $500 on the night, and I don't think twice about it. And that like little freedom of like having this great night, or when we're going to Florida and it's fucking the nice hotel and the front of the line this and the VIP that. Don't get me wrong, I still fucking yell at Heather for like exorbitant amount of spending of this shit. But that's when I feel rich. It's more the experience and not worrying. I went to Florida once with my mom, and it was like a huge deal. It was like the family trip we took, because we would like drive to Arizona or like, you know, whatever. We flew to Florida and did the parks. It was a massive deal because she saved it for years.
Right.
It took her years. And Heather on a whim was like, oh, Florida's more open than California. We haven't seen my parents. I'm flying everyone over. We're doing this crazy trip, you know, which is amazing. I would never do that. I'm an asshole. But she's the best and plans that. And that's when I feel rich. And it's just the freedom of not worrying about that shit, of worrying about like, you know, not just your bills, but like, how am I going to take care of this when everyone's older? And like, that's a stress. It's so gnarly. And I put myself through it probably more than I ever had to. Like, I always try to remind myself and everyone, it's not like I grew up in fucking the slums or something. Like, we were okay, but I just didn't like seeing my mom stress about it.
Right.
I said, I'm not going to, and whatever I have to do that, I'm going to do. And I don't know. That's just to me the best part about it. You know, all the other stuff's cool. Like, it's fun, but all the cliches you hear about it, like it going away or whatever, it does. Like, it's just another house you live in. It's just another car you drive in. It's just another piece of meat you're eating or whatever it is. But all that matters is the mental clarity of not stressing and the ability to create great memories with your family and friends. That's it. Like at the end of it all, you know, I have, that's all full of watches. When was the last time you saw me wear a watch?
Never.
Never. I don't wear a ring. I don't care about anything anymore. Yeah. You know, like I'm stoked that Tesla's going in 2 months and I just want to drive an El Camino. And like, it's funny. Like I did the lap, like, don't get me wrong. When I first got money, I dreamt of owning a Rolex. So I bought a lot of them and I'm like, this is fucking crazy. And now it's like, this kind of hurts my wrist. Like, why would I wear this? Like, I look at my phone to tell the time anyway. And like, yeah, like we go out, maybe I'll throw on a watch every once in a while, whatever. But like, that is just a microcosm. That's how it was with everything. That's how it was with cars and with houses and with all the shit, you know, like it all just goes away. It goes full, at least for me, it went full circle. And I don't know if that's because I was a hardcore kid and like always in the back of my mind had a little guilt, even though I flex like I don't, or it's just the natural human evolution of you want the shit, you get the shit, you realize you don't need the shit, you know? And the shit I need is my wife and my kids and my friends and, you know, my training and the stuff that gives to me regardless of what's going on in the world, you know?
I think the thing that makes me mad about, you know, money doesn't buy happiness. Yeah, but a lack of money does buy depression.
Yes.
And I've been there and you've been there and many of the listeners are there today. And so like for me, newsflash, spoiler alert, I didn't become wealthy, but I learned to not worry so much. And in that learning not to worry so much, like, you know how you're a good gambler, you don't respect money. Yeah. Like in learning how to not worry, suddenly I found out how to make more money because I wasn't so worried about the day in, day out. And there is something about, you know, far from being rich, but there is something about being comfortable where you just don't worry anymore.
Well, you, because you had both. You had a time where you woke up, wait, it's the 27th. Am I going to make rent? You had that in your life. Horrible. Everyone had that, right?
Horrible.
And now that you're just like, I'm not worrying about that and I'm trying to save towards X, or if I do this and that, I can get Y. Like that's just a different meta of life that you're thinking of and living. That is, and I just fully agree that like money doesn't buy you happiness per se. Like if you're in a miserable relationship with illness and whatever, and you hit the lottery, like you won't be happy. You won't. But if you have a pretty rad relationship and you're healthy and you have kids and you just come into money, like your life's probably going to get better as long as you don't behave like an asshole. You're just going to stress less and do fun things. And, you know, as long as you're good with people and are good to your people, you're not going to deal with the resentment that you hear people talking about most of the time, I don't think.
I once became good buds with a high-level CPA at Ernst & Young, like, you know, one of the biggest accounting firms in America. And I said, dude, what? Like, how do you get well off in life? You know, I was like young and in the band and struggling. And he gave me this Yoda bullshit. He's like, make more, spend the same. I'm like, fuck you, Steve. Like, what am I going to do with that advice? But it really resonates in my mind because a lot of people, they get that raise and then they go, oh, we deserve a nicer car, or let's get a bigger home, or let's put the kids in another school. And it's like, if you just calm down, and I think the pandemic taught a lot of people, if you just calm down with your spending, there's more money there than what you think.
Yeah.
And I think that the lifestyle that many of us were living because we were working so hard, when all of a sudden that went away, you're like, there's a lot more money here than what I knew that we had. But like, I know this about your wife because I interviewed her. And she told me a very amazing story that right when your second child was being born, she sold her business.
Mm-hmm.
Like down to the wire. Sells the business, gives birth to the kid. What, the next day?
Okay, so she sold her business and there's all these like different landmark things that happened. Like, okay, we're officially sold and now we're in escrow. And then after escrow, there's this period of time where you're technically on the hook, da da da. But like, and you would get money. Like you get money when you sell, you get money here, you get money there. It's like when you make an album, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it because both our kids were born C-section. So June wasn't planned. She went into labor, had issues, had C-section, all fine. Once she had one C-section, she's like, I already got the fucking scar. Let's just have a C-section. And by that point, we're such like kind of machines that she wanted to like literally just schedule the birth. And so we had this C-section scheduled on her birthday, November 22nd. And I'll never forget it. When you have a C-section, you have a normal day until you go to the hospital, you know, and I'm outside working out. And, you know, as I do, she walks out because we're like 2 hours from leaving to go have Lily. She fucking waddles in, 9 months pregnant, with her phone in her hand and just like shows me her phone that the wire hit our account. The wire hit the account and it's all in there now, you know? And it was just like, huh, like that's crazy, you know? Like we were good, but that fucking pushed us over, you know. Yeah, we were in this house and like we were good, but that was like
that was TKO, the moment where like right
we could, that's yeah, not we could be done if we want to be done,
right?
And I just remember I remember thinking how when I came up, if I would make a five figure, you know, 10,000 plus deposit, I would like lose my mind. I
was oh
like,
yeah,
dude, this is insane. Like
I remember the first time I held a check for more than $9,999, yes, and it blew my mind.
Yeah,
blew so my mind.
Like every time, they'd be like, 16 grand, and oh my god, this tour made 34 grand. Holy shit, 62 grand. Like oh my god.
Yeah,
you know, and it was like that forever. And then she showed me this massive lump sum that hit, and I was just remember being like, I literally felt like Forrest Gump. You know, it was like, one last thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, cool. We don't got to worry about money. Nothing to change. We're going to go have a kid. I'm going to finish this set. You know, we're going to like, I don't know. It was, and it's easy to say that now because like I said, we were already in a good spot and I knew it was coming, but it was just such a funny moment where there's two goalposts for her where during kid one, her company was so small. She was hand doing her paychecks in the delivery room for her like four employees in March of 2013 when we were giving birth to June. Literally writing checks with her big old belly is my favorite picture in the world. Fast forward 5 more years and we're having another kid, I guess 4 more years. We're having another kid and the business sold. And those are just two crazy points. Like she started it and it was like kind of doing okay and she was doing payroll herself and it just fucking nuke bomb eruption. And then she, you know, got out the same day Lily did.
So Lily's born. And what she told me that I thought was impressive is I said to her when I was interviewing her, I said, Heather, you've already been wildly successful, more so than anybody that I've ever known in business. Like you hit the fucking grand slam out of everybody that I know. Why start your supplement company? And she told me because one day your oldest daughter thought that her job was buying stuff off of Amazon.
True story.
Because she wasn't working and boxes would show up every day. And she, June had said to somebody, yeah, my mommy shops off of Amazon. That's her job. And Heather said to me, one of the greatest answers I've ever heard in over, you know, 1300 episodes. She's like, I didn't want to be that to my daughters. I wanted to start a new business so that I could be a working mom and be a role model to my daughters and show them that they could work and that they could be somebody. So what are you going to do to be a good role model to your two daughters? Because the grind, they were too little to see. Mm-hmm. But now that they're, you know, woke and they're becoming little humans, and you're going to take a little bit of time to like find yourself, but you're going to do something, right? Like you can't let these two girls have a memory of, well, dad just kind of hangs out and, you know, works out in the gym for 6 hours and go plays karate with his friends. Like, you're going to do something though at some moment, right? Like,
I assume.
You have to be a role model for them on the hard work and perseverance that built your story.
Yeah. Well, there's, I think there's two ways I'm going to look at that. A, I don't have a plan. I do not have like, oh, I'm going to move into this. I don't have that plan right now.
I don't think you should have a plan right now.
But I'm also going to lean into the years that most people lose working and grinding, spending it with them as much as I can. And I think when they grow up, I'm going to instill work ethic in them no matter what, whether it's through sports, school, even they talk about it now, like how much I work out and stuff. They're just like, man, it's crazy how much you work out. It's so like, oh, you know, they've even said like, you look so much younger than some of my friends' parents. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
that's cool. Like I don't tell them that. Like, you got to work out, stay fit, bro. You know, like they're getting old enough to pick up on shit.
Right.
So I hope that the happy medium of me being around more and involved in their lives. And, you know, before you got here, I played soccer forever with June outside. You know what I mean? And like, if I was working, I would be in here working. Like,
yeah.
Even on Sunday. Like, that's what I'd be doing. So I'm hoping any amount of like wonder they have of like, I wonder what he does, they'll understand like, oh, fuck, he's there for me for everything. Every morning, we, you know, especially since pandemic with kids in private school, I mean, I commute like a job. I have to drop these damn kids off all over Orange County to get them in school every day. You know, every day. We take them to school. We talk about school. We go over our spelling words with June on the way. Like, all, the whole...
But imagine how different that commute is where you get to be present with June.
Yeah.
And what are you doing today, bud? And on the way home, how was school? How was it? Like, versus her sitting in the back on an iPad while you're just ripping through phone after phone because... Yeah. you know, 7 a.m. out here is 10 on the east,
there,
and
yeah.
bands are already getting settlements and things happen from last night.
Yeah.
And like, you would just be in the shit and she would just be in the back, not present on an iPad like every other kid.
Yeah. And I think that only happens to people when you don't realize that's happening to you. You know, like, oh, I didn't realize I wasn't instilling a work ethic in my kid because I was just like on my boat fucking around all the time. Like, I'm very, all my friends aren't in this spot and raising their kids a certain way. And I think are amazing parents and I emulate them. So I'll be doing what they do. We'll be doing what they do. And B, I just know me to where it won't let it get to that. And if they grow up with no work ethic, I don't think it'll be because I wasn't working 60 hours a week for them. You know what I mean? Or in front of them. They're going to understand. At some point, they're going to be at an age to understand why we have what we have, how we got what we got. And who knows, by then, maybe I will have something that they see, but it's just not something I'm worried about or even thinking about, really. You know, it's like the one, when people ask, it's like the one question is obviously, well, what now? And it's just like, I don't know. And not like, I don't know, like I'm a drifter, I don't know. I don't know, and that's fucking sick. You know,
I think so too.
Like, I'm so stoked to not know. And if it's a goddamn pizzeria that just keeps me busy, or I open a jiu-jitsu gym, or fucking who knows what I come up with, those aren't even things I'm whatever thinking about, but there'll either be something or there won't. And there's never gonna be a time where I'm gonna be in a rut because I have nothing to do. It's just not who I am. It's never who I was, and it's not who I'll be if faced with something, if faced with boredom, if faced with like anything like that. You know, it's not gonna happen.
Do you think if you started something else, you could do something else and not go full psycho mode?
I won't even, like we've talked about, I won't even start new hobbies. Like, Hammer wants me to play golf. I'm like, can't do it. I'll dive in too much. I'll play six times a week and like, I can't do it. It's too much time. I can't do anything kinda. Anything I do it too much. It's not a good thing. It's not a brag. It sucks. Like, if I miss a day of training, Heather will come home and just be like, what the fuck's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, I'll just be grumpy and annoyed. And it's not like, I didn't get to fight today. It's just like, I didn't get part of my schedule locked in. Like, I enjoy that. It's a release when I'm there, especially like back when I was working a ton, I didn't have to think about anything, you know, like I dive in too psycho to just be like, oh, I'm going to do this little thing, you know? So anything I do get into, I have to be careful to know that it's going to consume me. And if I would love to do something that I've never done, which isn't for money, open a jiu-jitsu school for kids that can't afford jiu-jitsu schools or something, you know, and
yeah.
pay the bills other ways and just have this thing that I get a fulfillment another way, you know, like we do some charity stuff and it is crazy how good it makes you feel, which is like, not me. I was never a person like, fuck them. I need the money. No. It's not even the money. It's the time. You've just grown to a different spot to where different things make you feel good. Like, I bought my mom a car and it was like the best feeling I had in all the shit I've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, it made her so happy and it like was such a good feeling to me.
You also surprised her with it though too.
Yeah, totally surprised her.
Which adds a whole other level of element.
Yeah. And it was like right when my dad was doing like not good. And so like, it was just bad news after bad news after bad news, like that she was just getting pummeled with. And to bring like some joy at that time and remembers that era, like that is so much better feeling than like I made another five-figure deposit, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I don't have that answer, and I'm stoked to not have that answer, and everyone's in support of me not having that answer. Heather's just like, dude, just fucking chill.
I think you should just be for a moment. But you know, you do talk about your future with your partner, obviously, and you know, you and Heather had like a figure, like if we can just grind and get to this moment, we can be free. But have you guys thought at all, like with the wealth and with the kids going away, like, what does this look like empty nest? Because you're doubling down now. You're going full psycho mode on your girls. But, you know, and I know that no parent likes to think about the empty nest days because it's like the most heartbreaking part of being a parent when they don't need you anymore. But have you guys ever talked or thought about, like, what does this look like then with that freedom? Because
like, in, like, 15 years or so, let's say, when both kids are out or whatever.
When they're in college, when they're living their own lives, and then it's just the two of you again. Like, do you guys ever sort of talk about what that looks like with this sort of a means?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks fun as hell, you know? Like, I mean, so much traveling to do, so much, like, things to plan. I can't picture the kids. Maybe, who knows, you know? Like, to me, the kids are going to do what I did growing up, but we'll stay close, even though I moved out, but I stayed close. They're always going to be in the mix, you know?
Right, of course.
Like, we'll travel.
You don't want them to become drifters.
Yeah, exactly. We'll still have our hobbies. I'll be doing something involved with athletics until I'm dead, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't even think about it that much because there's never been a day of my life where it wasn't filled. Even today, it's like it's Sunday. I'm retired technically, and it's like all morning busy. Got my workout in. Have this. Immediately got to go down and meet up with what the fam's doing to immediately go to this dinner plan we have. It's just it fucking goes. No matter what, it goes. And if it doesn't, Heather will plan something. It's like, oh, we haven't seen your mom. We're doing this for your mom, and we got to do this and this and take care of her for that and go see Gigi and go whatever. You know?
Like life at that speed,
though. I love life at that. I have to have life at that speed. Every once in a while, like once a month, there'll be like what I call the lull period on like Sunday at like 3 p.m. We've already done an activity. Something's occurred because never a day where we just wake up and like, all right, turn on the TV and we'll see you later. We've already done something. We've gone to the park. We've gone to eat, whatever it is. And I've already worked out and we got a dinner plan, but there's nothing to do for a couple hours. Every once in a while, I like, get in bed and just like watch TV for those couple hours. I'm like, oh, this is sick. But literally like once a month, you know, and like I don't nap. I don't, you know, it's I don't know. I know that my life won't change very much.
So hard thing to figure out now, just a few days later. But how does it feel to be free?
After I had that big cry in Heather's chest, it was like it was that word is free. I felt free and like not like I was so slave. Oh, my God. It's just. The end of a long story, like just close the book on the end of a long story. And it just feels good. It feels clear. Like there's no gray area of like, oh, what's up with this band? What's up with this person? What's up with this employee? I gotta do this thing. This fucking lawsuit's hanging over my head. It's like I've settled my last lawsuit last year. I have all my bands are in the know of everything and have a plan. All my employees are taken care of. Like I took care of them during the whole pandemic and they're fine for like months now. Like I've done everything in my head in a righteous way on that front. My family's in full support of it. And I just feel like full closure. Like I feel good. This conversation is like the end. I mean, I text you how I was anxious about it, you know, yeah. Like this is like the end of it for me. I'm sure once I like talk, once I put it out there, I'll have a conversation again. But for me, when I like post about this and whatever I say on the internet and like deal with that, like that's the end for me for this. And it's just closure. And I'll see you at the show if I want to go to it. And I'll talk to you about the band if you want to discuss it. And we'll still have lunch if we're tight outside of music, you know, like that's all still going to happen. But for me mentally, which is I'm a very mental person, this is just the end of it officially. And I can't like dabble in it. Like when I started having these calls on Friday, I just went and went and went and went and went. And I'm asking everyone, you talk to this guy? You talk to this guy? You talk to this guy? You got your ducks in a row? Because I'm doing a podcast Sunday. I'm talking about Monday. Like I'm fucking out. And I can't not, you know? Like when I wrote E-Tid and he's like, oh, I'm traveling. Can we talk tomorrow? I'm like, honestly, no. Like we have to talk tonight. Like I need this all done, you know? And that's just how it had to be. And that's how it is. And I don't know. I'm just happy. I'm fucking happy. I seriously woke up and like feel different. Full on feel different. I got like a couple emails and like got to tell a couple people like, oh, this is the reply to your email. But also like kind of crazy, but I'm retiring. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, and that'll be the case for a while, I'm sure. But
when do you change your signature on your emails to gone fishing?
Dude, what's crazy was I told like my partners at the company, I'm like, hey, a huge reason I'm dreading this is like, I can't really change my email. Like every login I have is connected to this damn email. Like, I need this email for like years to come. You know, they're like laughing. Like, yeah, no worries, dude.
And just to clarify, you're retired. Does that mean the good fight is over with?
No,
or
good fight is definitely not over.
Because Conroy handed it down to you.
Mm-hmm.
You took the reins.
Took the reins with Conroy to partner Carl. We then partnered with me and a few other guys. It's kind of a cesspool of a situation.
Yeah.
Outwardly, it seems like I'm the guy, but everyone's just as much of a guy as me. And they're the majority of people are staying and just continuing a good fight. As far as I know, I mean, it's been 48 hours, but that's the majority. Some people are going to do something else, but.
And at this moment, do you feel like you did everything you accomplished to do? Did you let anybody down? Like, do you feel good? Like that you ended on the high note that you wanted to end on?
Yeah. Yeah. I let some people down. I've fucked up and I've made mistakes, of course, but I think overall, given like how many decisions and like things I was in charge of for those years, like I had a pretty good batting average. I was always honest with people. No one can call me a liar or dishonest or had like a conniving business ethics. Or
I always
like
found
that.
It fascinating how frank you were. You were just like, blunt, like, well, this is how it is.
Well, it's because everyone attaches emotion to everything. And it's like...
But you also weren't one of those game players. We know people right. in this business that just play mind games and just fuck over everybody.
I honestly think it's because I had so much going on all the time. Like, I had so much going on that, like, I didn't have time to fucking jerk off this label to fucking hype up this label so they battled each other. And it's just like, I would just call them and be like, dude, I'm talking to X, Y, and Z. I want to be with you. This is the number I need to be at to feel good about it. And I don't even need to go do all the bullshit.
Like,
if you want me to do the bullshit, I'll go do the bullshit. But if you get me to this number, and I would do it with bands too.
Yeah.
You're the band I want for this tour at this slot. I don't need to go talk to everyone. This is it. I'm not going to send you an offer for $2,500. So you come back at $3,500 and meet at $3,000. The number's $3,000. If you want to do it, let's do it. You know.
But I always admired that, because if I know the music industry, if I made a gamut, right? I put Andrew Ellis far, far on one end.
Going with names.
And I put you far, far, far on another end of, like, he's the ultimate fucking game player and you're just like, no games. If it's $3,000, you would just call the band and be like, look, it's $3,000. I know you guys normally play for more than this, but here's the thing. This person will be there. That'll be there. Is it bad to play in front of these people? It's up to you. And I always just admired that so much, because I know so many fucking knuckleheads between you and Ellis where they make it a game and they're always trying to fuck with other people. And
everyone's scared. Everyone's making decisions based on money and, like,
I hate that.
Yeah, it's bullshit. And
it was one of the best things about getting out of the music business is just to leave all the bullshit jokers behind.
Yeah. And I don't want to say, like, I definitely had to massage some shit in my day. Don't get me wrong. Sure. Especially with band members. Like, you can't just roll up and be like, hey, this is what's up, dude. Like, you have to tell them, like, yes, I understand leaving your family for 6 weeks in the middle of the summer is not ideal. And this is what, you know, the reason why I believe in it.
As you got wealthier, did it make it hard to have those conversations with a bass player with a second kid on the way who could barely...
For multiple reasons.
Yeah.
A, I felt it more for them. Like, dude, yeah, I couldn't leave either.
Yeah.
Don't know. I quit touring because I couldn't do it.
I
flew home because I couldn't deal with being in Australia with my friends. Like, I could tell it was done, you know? But on that level, as a parent, and then also on, like, the wear front of it on my brain of, like, I knew certain people I had to call and go through the gymnastics of this just to get to the result I know we're going to get to, you know, because the more important, quote unquote, people in the band already had decided. And, like, this guy doesn't really know that he doesn't have the weight that he thinks he does, you know, and that just gets fucking tiring. Very tiring.
Yeah.
I'm just so done with that.
Because for so many people, the band is like this, like, fantasy, right? And you have to bring reality in there and sort of navigate this very bizarre relationship. That, I mean, these people are in the trenches together, right? The worst hotels, the worst living conditions ever, and they're tethered together. And all, I mean, people don't understand how miserable it is to be in a band when you live 23 hours and 15 minutes a day for 45 minutes on stage.
Yep.
Like, it is nothing but misery. And then you go in there and try to work through all of that. So, question for you as we're wrapping up today. Were you luckier than the other guys, or did you work harder than the other guys? Like, how did you get to this spot where a lot of people don't get?
God, I hate fucking walking the fence, but it's both, dude. It's seriously both. It's being lucky for the opportunities I was given, and then working hard once I got them. Because any asshole can have an idea. Any asshole can have an opportunity. But execution is everything. You cannot do anything correctly without proper execution. Whether it's an ABA company with 1,000 employees like my wife. Or talking to a band for the first time and promising them XYZ and then not doing it. Like, you have to have intent with everything and execute everything a certain way. But it's not lost on me that, like, if I didn't once upon a time become friends with Boosty to not get the call when he thought maybe if I went and hung out with Anthony Green, I could manage the band, like, that's fucking lucky, you know? Like, Boosty was in Sales with Anthony. Anthony left Sales, they stayed friends. He came back, said some sentences to Boosty that got me out to Indio to talk to them, you know? It's not lost on me that my friend Nick Storch was eating a meal with someone who got fired by the story so far, and then as he's learning that, text me like, hey, I'm at dinner with so-and-so, like, story so far needs a manager. I'm with them the next day at In-N-Out trying to pitch it. We locked the band in before anyone knew that they were on the market, and they were about to pop. Anybody that managed that band could have taken them to a certain level at least, because it was already in motion. We did our thing and we did great for them, but that was just luck, dude. I got that text and we were in there before, you know, they literally happened to be in California, like all, or they're from California, but happened to be in SoCal. It's just like the stars aligned, you know, and there's so many instances of that to where, you know, I got the opportunity because I was lucky, but I executed because I work hard, you know, and that's just how life goes. You know, I when I got the gig from Conroy to start, like he went to Warped Tour and I'm just like, oh man, I'm getting burnt out. And I got this chick at home I love. Like, I don't know. And it just resonated with him. Just like, maybe we should do something. Lit a fire into his ass. The next thing I know, he gives me the opportunity. And what if I just said, I don't know, that sounds like all this work. I could just keep making $1,500 a week touring with the band. Fuck that. I went and jumped in head first, not knowing shit, you know, and became a person that worked all day long on tour and, you know, for my touring job while on the road, and then managed also. So it's like, that was just hard work, you know, and identifying the opportunity that someone like him that I wanted to align with gave me, and diving in and not just being like, you know, most people that go like, oh, it sounds like a lot of work, or like, yeah, let's do it, as you're like saying goodbye. And then like, you know,
I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You know?
I fucking did it. And I did it every time I thought the opportunity could work out. And sometimes it didn't. Sometimes I'd take a band because I'm like, oh, I can make money. And these people are terrible. Or I don't understand this world enough. Or we ended on a bad note. You know, mm-hmm. That, more often than not, it wasn't that. But I'm not like a bad at 1,000 by any means. You know, but taking the opportunity when it presented itself and fucking running with it until you couldn't run anymore.
I was going to ask you if you had any parting advice, but that sounds like that's the advice, right? Like,
yeah.
Be present. And when you take on a task, like actually execute, get it done, make sure you can work as hard as you can at what's presented to you. And that's the biggie story, right?
That's me. I just think a lot of people think like you get lucky, but it's like I either get lucky a lot or I make good on the opportunities presented to me, you know?
I think though that a lot in life, we make our own luck.
For sure.
Like you put yourself in the circuit, in the scene, so that you know all the other players. You're there when those opportunities are popping. You're the first guy that Boosty calls or Nick texts. You know what I mean? Like, you make your own luck by putting yourself there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that always wonder, why not me? Why not me? Well, it's not you because you're not putting yourself in the game. You're like sitting at home with your arms crossed wondering, why not me? Instead of being out there living your life so that you could be that person that gets the call or gets the tip. So then you do have the opportunity to work hard and gather it. Two last questions. Are you Biggie now or are you Nick?
I tried to be Nick once and it didn't work. So I'm probably Biggie forever.
Is there anybody you'd like to talk shit about now that you're completely free from the music industry?
Fuck no. Not on air. Not on air. Not on air.
I mean, you're a free man.
I know.
Is there anybody that, nope, you want to throw a jab at while, no, you're a free man?
Nope. Opposite. I want to thank everyone that let some fucking big-eared, big-teeth idiot have a successful career in this sick industry and, you know, support me along the way and make me feel the love as I'm leaving.
Are you prepared to have to buy concert tickets?
That's not happening. Unless the whole industry does like a 180.
I hope you get blackballed and that you have to pay to go to everything. Actually, that would just mean that you would never go to a concert.
I would never go again.
There you go, friends. Another episode of Adventures in Design in the books, episode AID 1359. So pumped for Biggie and Heather, really. I mean, this is a couple's go. This is a family's success story. Just happy to see somebody I know in their early 40s to just be able to say, I did it. I'm done. It doesn't feel the way that it used to. I don't want to fake the funk. I just want to live my life, enjoy my children while they're small. And, you know, if you're rolling eyes at this, you're a shithead. Because how many episodes have we listened to where we all bond and go, oh, wow, I can't believe that so-and-so's mom or so-and-so's dad was not present. And, wow, how could you treat your kid that way? But, oh, they went on to become a success story. Like, this is literally a story about a guy who's like, this, my family, this is something I didn't know that I would love as much as I do. I didn't know that this would be such an unbelievable honor to be these two adorable little girls' father. I think I want to hold on to this moment. I think this now is the priority in my life, and this is something that I want to do. And to have the financial means to be able to choose that over everybody else, like, that is an amazing story. So if you're rolling your eyes at this, you're just an asshole, because that means that you're just addicted to misery. Let me tell you something I've learned about YouTube. People love bad news. If I take a good story and I reframe it as horribly as possible, it just pops. So don't be one of those people. Don't be somebody that's addicted to bad news. Learn somehow to be happy for others, and I guarantee you, you'll learn a whole new level of happiness for yourself. All right, this was a special Monday episode. I want to help out a bud. I wanted to get this out. Recorded it on a Sunday, produced it on a Sunday, got it out on a Monday. Normally, I'd be hanging out with Sean Mort talking about Bucky Falcon, Winter Soldier bullshit. But, you know, when opportunity comes knocking, you answer. And when a friend looks for a favor, you always help out a friend because you know they would do the same for you. All right, I will be back here tomorrow if you decide to show up, and I'll see you then. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you so much, Biggie, for sharing your story with all of us. Good luck with whatever you do next. Can't wait to see that next move. And if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to share it somewhere on social media, that would help me out a whole lot more than you probably even have considered. And if you're listening and you see this posted someplace or you're over in the Circle of Trust, let me know. Was there something in here that you could relate to? I found this story to be extremely relatable, even though I'm in a very, very different financial situation. But as I said in the middle of today's interview, I did sort of reassess my life. I did look at things, looked at where they were going, and go, okay, let's be honest here. Probably not going to become a millionaire. Probably not going to become a 500,000-aire. But you do enjoy the work that you do. Is there a way that you can do all of this and create more happiness and feel more accomplished at the same time? Like, let's set a new agenda of goals. And in doing so, let's rewrite the rules. Let's make it easier to enjoy the actual work and cut bait on all the bullshit that, P.S., isn't fucking doing you any favors. You're not blowing up. You're not seeing bags of money get dropped off on the front porch. So what can we just get rid of and focus on the fun? And if we can still make nearly the same, but drop the bullshit, Bricky, you've retired from bullshit. And what does everybody want to do with their professional career? Get rid of all the bullshit. So, yeah, kind of retired from a lot of things like writing back emails. And it made my life so much happier. All right, everybody, I'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a good day. Thank you so much for showing up and listening.